Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today, I'm looking forward to our show because we're going to have a conversation about wealth and about entrepreneurship. And during the last year, and quite frankly, if you're a small business owner and you run your own ship, this has been a trying time because it's from the healthcare perspective, we lost about 13,000 practices during this COVID pandemic. And most of them were small business owners. And there's been a rush, at least in the healthcare sector, from private independent practices to becoming employees of hospitals and various corporate interests. And I think one thing that I've learned through this is that being on your own has a lot of, you know, it's good times and it's some trying times, but ultimately, if you run your own ship, I think that you have the most ability to be nimble, to be able to navigate all these changes. And just because somebody pays you a salary doesn't mean you have freedom. And I'd rather have freedom and run my own ship than any other thing that I could think of. And today we're going to speak with Mr. Wayne Titus. He's the founding partner of AMDG Financial and AMDG Business Advisory Services. And he's the author of The Entrepreneur's Guide to Financial Well-Being. And he can speak with a wealth of knowledge about how people, entrepreneurs specifically, can help themselves think ahead, plan for the future, and not be so buffeted by whatever financial changes come through. He holds a BS degree in accounting from the University of South Florida, a BA degree in business administration from Grove City College in Pennsylvania, and a master's degree in employee benefits law at the John Marshall Law School in Chicago. He has been in corporate America and understands running being able to help Fortune 500 companies. And I love the fact that you've disengaged from that because entrepreneurship is a passion for you. And it is for, I think, everybody who owns their own business, a labor of love. But we need to understand what we don't know. And that's why I'm loving having you on the show so that you can speak to that and help us navigate this system, which I think most of us do it by the seat of our pants. So thank you for coming on.
Dr. George, it's my pleasure to do that. I grew up in an entrepreneurial business. My father was an entrepreneur. My grandfather and grandmother were entrepreneurs. My great-grandparents were entrepreneurs. People don't think about farmers as being entrepreneurs, but he was a farmer, my great-grandfather, great-grandmother, and they raised Holstein cows and sold Holstein cows into their area. And so entrepreneurism kind of runs deep in my family. And eventually I did, I was working for a large big four accounting firm. But I really wanted to work with my dad and his business. I grew up going to the dealership with him on Saturday mornings and washing cars, something I actually abhor doing today. I've washed so many cars. But the fun thing is, I wanted to make an impact. My wife says I had my midlife crisis early, but I really just wanted to be more impactful than working with large companies. And that's what kind of gave me that seed in my mind to start my business. And I don't know if you're familiar with kind of the quote from Reid Hoffman. He was the LinkedIn co-founder. He said, an entrepreneur is someone who jumps off a cliff and builds a plane on the way down. And that's what I did in 2002. I jumped off the cliff. I was earning a good salary, and I felt like there was a huge need to serve clients in the area of integrating tax financial investment strategy and specifically helping entrepreneurs. I saw my dad get some very bad advice from a CPA that he was working with. And, an advisor is somebody that's really important in an entrepreneur's life. And a good advisor is hard to find. And if you can find one, that's the most important thing that you can do to ensure your business success. Your passion's important. Your product is important. But it's also good to have outside advisors, because entrepreneurs usually think with their gut, but sometimes they can't see around corners or see those pitfalls ahead. And having the right advisor is really helpful to be able to see those things while you're focused on your passion or your product.
I happen to agree wholeheartedly with that. I mean, whether it's healthcare or whatever your passion is, you know, we're very good at what it is that we're putting out there, the product. But I don't think, I mean, as physicians, we don't know very much about money and how to manage it. It's kind of the opposite of what we do, training. And there's so many doctors who don't know and who try to run a business. And I mean, it's not just doctors, but it's everybody, because this is a specialty. I mean, you have so many things that you don't know. And at the end of the year, when you have to do your taxes, you wish you knew a lot more, because it's all about, for whatever, whoever it is, keeping as much as you possibly can and preparing for the unforeseen. I don't think, you know, your head is down, you're working so hard, you're just trying to make sure, making payroll, making sure your employees are whole. It's so many different moving parts, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, the U.S. tax code is complex. I heard somebody describe it once as having 6 or 7 different dimensions of taxation. So you think about a Rubik's Cube. I've never been good at solving Rubik's Cubes, but the tax code has a lot more sides to it than the Rubik's Cube does. And it's impossible to solve things unless you focus on it all the time. You know, this is just an area of expertise that we've built up over time, but how these parts interact with each other. It's not what you earn in the markets that will make you successful. It's what you keep after taxes, mm-hmm. right? Everybody pays taxes and pays their fair share, should pay their fair share, but they shouldn't have to pay more than they're required to pay. And when you integrate your tax plan with your financial and investment strategy, you are mitigating the impact of tax by managing your investment approach to accomplish your financial goals and objectives. And that, I think, is really the missing link for most entrepreneurs in all of this. They don't have the advisors that are helping them see what, you know, the opportunity that needs to be visible to them. They're not helping them see these pitfalls and putting a plan in place to ensure that they're taking advantage of, you know, getting the right retirement plan in place and not putting in a cookie cutter plan that's going to cost them money instead of having it work for them in the long run.
Well, there's so many different aspects of it. Just, I know we're going to take a break in a couple minutes, but let's start off with those entrepreneurs that have employees. I mean, what's the strategy for being able to, if you can and want to, offer healthcare plans to your employee, with whether or not you help pay for their retirement, all sorts of things that you have to decide about how your relationship should work with the employee, right? It's not just give them a paycheck and then that's it. I mean, especially if you want to keep an employee and for the long term, instead of having this revolving door, right?
I agree. And I think most entrepreneurs are very generous, you know, with their employees and their team. They want to keep the people that want to be part of, you know, what's important to that entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find good people. So how do you keep them? You know, it's a competitive hiring world. So you need to think about what benefits to offer. But the thing that probably I find distracts entrepreneurs more than anything else is when they provide that benefit and it's wasted. I'll give you a quick example. A 401k plan that has a 3% safe harbor. It's a very common kind of retirement plan that's marketed to small businesses by payroll companies primarily, or insurance companies. They're cookie cutter plans. I refer to them as cookie cutter plans. And they don't consider the fact that if someone leaves after being there a year, they leave with the 3% match that you put in for them. It's wasted. Mm-hmm. Because that person wasn't sticking around or didn't plan to stick around. They just waited until they had the next better job. And so, you know, entrepreneurs' resources are limited. They take on many times they take on a lot of debt to get their businesses up and running. From the physician practices, you've got a lot of student debt that you have to try to, you know, get out from under. And so you have to kind of consider, you don't want to throw good money after bad. And so having the right feature within the plan that may require the employee to be there longer, or if you have high turnover in your industry that considers the fact that that high turnover is going to cost you a lot of money if you have a 3% safe harbor match, you want to structure it so that that plan can work for you as an entrepreneur, but also provide the benefit to the employees that are going to, and the team members that are going to stick with you over the long term. Doesn't mean you're going to keep everybody, or that some of those contributions might not go out the door over a period of time, but you want to minimize that impact. Mm-hmm. And you can structure a plan that basically recycles what are called forfeitures. So if somebody leaves before they vest, that money stays in the plan, and that forfeiture can be used to offset your future costs. So you're actually recycling those contributions from team members that aren't going to stick around to be able to use them for new team members that may stick around.
That's a good thought. On that note, let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Wayne Titus. He is the founding partner of AMDG Financial and the author of The Entrepreneur's Guide to Financial Well-Being. You know, that's what it's kind of the things that we think about our employees, but let's turn around and think about the employer, because I think most entrepreneurs put themselves at the back of the boat. Everybody else gets taken care of. Everybody gets paid first, especially when you're starting off your own practice or your own business. How do you catch up? Because it's all about floating, you know, getting it up and running. But when your business is ready, when you're ready to retire, you really want to have something that you've saved. And is there, I know that personally, that's kind of been everybody comes first for me. What's the thing that you tell entrepreneurs to do to try to catch up, or what do they need to start thinking about early in their in the structure of their business to help themselves when they retire?
I think the first thing is don't put finances on the back burner. You have to be thinking about it on the front edge of the stove. You have to take care of that pot first. If you don't, you know, the tendency, just like anything else in life, is I'll do it later. I need to do this. Successful entrepreneurs are unique. They're curious. They're adaptable. They're decisive. They're team builders. They're tolerant of risk. They're comfortable with failure. They're persistent, and they're innovative, and they're focused on the long term. Mm-hmm. So if an entrepreneur has those kinds of attributes, and they can just, you know, work with the right advisor to help guide them to look at how can I focus on finances and get myself paid first, right? I mean, that's the most important thing, is not just the paying yourself first, but saving for retirement first, making sure you've got that strategy in place to know how you're going to bridge to that goal of retirement, whatever that goal happens to be for you. And having the right advisor to help you with that, I think, is crucial for that.
One of the things that strikes me about your business or your company is that you're a fee-only fiduciary advisor. So the client's interests are put first, you know, ahead of the success of your success depends on the success of the client. And is that unusual? Because usually you think of everybody kind of, some of the financial huge companies, it's all about them first and you kind of an afterthought. Seems like you've taken the opposite approach.
Yeah, that's actually how I started my firm in 2002. I saw a gap in the marketplace where, you know, people were not being served well. There's different financial models that people were not aware of. The fact that you use the word fiduciary is exciting to me, because it wasn't something that was real common, you know, back in 2002 when I started my business. Nobody knew what that word meant. It truly means a duty of loyalty. Like, that's the legal definition of that, having that duty of loyalty to serve that client and to serve them well. The problem with it is, you know, in our in our industry, there's three different models of service. So when you think of financial services, there's the commission based business, which is, you know, what people think of as stockbrokers or insurance agents. Those are their pure commission models. And so they actually have a duty of loyalty to the product, to their employer, not to their client, right? They're employees of a larger firm that pushes them to sell product. There's fee-based advisors, and fee-based advisors sound like fee-only advisors, but they're not. They actually split their duty. They can be fiduciaries when they give advice on allocating a portfolio, but as soon as they give advice on what product to put in that portfolio, they change hats from the fiduciary hat to the commission hat, the suitability hat. And it's a lower standard of care because they're selling financial products. They mm-hmm. don't have to be thinking about the client's, you know, what that duty of loyalty is to that client. And so there's some misunderstanding of what that means in our world. A fee-only advisor is a fiduciary when they give advice on allocation and when they select products for their clients. So like you said, their interests are in alignment with their client. They have a duty of loyalty to that client to ensure that they're doing the right things all the time. And that's what I loved about that model for me, to know that that model was there and start my business right out of the gate as a fee-only practice. I knew if I did the right things were going to happen. I didn't have to worry and think about my wallet. All I had to do was do the right things for my clients, and then my business would grow. And that's what's happened. And I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs want to do, is they want to do what's right for their clients, their customers, and they want their business to grow kind of on that word of mouth, referral, introduction mm-hmm. kind of basis.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And, you know, you talked a bit about the Wall Street side of it and investing stocks and that sort of thing. Is that something that people should, I mean, it's kind of to me like a casino in some instances, but do you recommend that people put some of their money in that and 401k, like mix it, or stay away from stocks altogether? How would you advise somebody? Because it seems like you can make a lot of money in the stock market if you want to do things that are emerging and that sort of thing. But if it doesn't work, you're kind of out of luck.
Yeah, well, we just came out of this period of, you know, hearing about GameStop, mm-hmm. you know, and then just recently AMC. You know, people are always talking about finding that hot stock or having that hot stock tip and riding it to the moon, right? But it's kind of like the lottery. There's only one winner, and there's so few and far between. And how much money do you spend on lottery tickets, you know, before you realize the likelihood of that happening is not high.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing in the, you know, in the stock market. You can pick one stock and think that you're going to get wealthy from it, but it's not likely to occur. And so in general, you know, what I think is the best strategy for most clients is to diversify, and to diversify into different asset classes and to rebalance your portfolio, to have a strategy and to stick with that strategy over a long period of time. It will serve you well. You know, it will help you have a high likelihood of success versus a shot in the dark kind of success. And so we do that by using institutional mutual funds. You know, I think mutual funds provide a great opportunity, but you have to be careful when you look at mutual funds. There's different underlying costs. Some mutual funds are more diversified than others. And just because you might own 10 or 15 mutual funds doesn't mean you're well diversified, because many of those mutual funds hold all of the same thing. So it's important, again, probably to talk with somebody that has some experience in that area. And then who do you go to? My suggestion is you go to a fee-only advisor, because they're not going to get compensated for the product that you end up with. They're going to get compensated for the advice they provide you.
That's a whole different mindset. And so you're both rowing in the same boat, the same way, as opposed to you win, I win, you lose, I win.
Yeah.
Which is always something that, you know, I'm a big fan of follow the money, right? So if something is, and we can use medicine as our example, if somebody stands to gain and it works against the interest of the patient or the physician, you shouldn't be involved with that. It's very comforting to know that if you hire somebody from your firm, AMDG, because that's what we're talking about, that you don't have to worry about somebody having an interest that works against you. And sometimes, as you describe, people don't know these things until it's too late, right? I mean, they end up really behind the eight ball and out of, you know, on the outside looking in. I can't imagine how devastating that would be.
Yeah, I've seen some really terrible things for people that came to me as prospective clients, you know, looking at portfolios that might hold, variable indexed annuities and other kinds of insurance products. They might have been deemed to be suitable for that client, but they really weren't in the client's best interest, and they locked up a lot of their money. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of cost. And if they don't keep paying that premium, in essence, that annuity collapses over time. So there's a lot of products that are sold out of fear, right? Annuity products are typically sold to people that are scared about losing their money in the market. So they want an index so that they don't lose anything. But the problem with that is they're actually locking themselves into a very low return because they're capped at how much they can also earn. And so it works against their interest. Who figures that out, right? That's an annuity is a legal contract written by an insurance company. Well, the actuaries behind the insurance companies are the ones that figured out what the odds are that the casino, the house, is going to win on those contracts. And guess what? Just like a casino, the odds are stacked in the house's favor. Mm. So who suffers? The consumer. So you need to be very, very careful about things. And I think you said very early on in the conversation, not act out of fear, but to be educated. You know, I listened to a couple of your podcasts before we started, and the one quote I saw in one of the interviews, you said, you know, patients need to be educated as consumers. And it's the same thing for entrepreneurs or other investors in the market. They need to be educated as consumers. It doesn't mean that they have to know all of the details mm-hmm. behind financial investing and things like that. They do need to be very familiar with, how the industry works and how people operate in the industry. Like you said, follow the money.
That's the mantra of the show, because it seems to be an axiom that just, I don't care what we're talking about. It seems to be, if it's human nature, I don't know what, but you really have to be wary. And you have to be discerning. And again, if you don't have fear as your guide, you're able to actually look and be discerning and make conscious choices. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Wayne Titus. You can go to his website, Wayne BTitus3.com, and you can get his book on the website and also read more about what he does. And, you know, we talked about the stock market, but there's other avenues, isn't there, for being able to maintain your wealth? Like, instead of, for example, if you rent your office space versus buying a building, things that are tangible like that, is that something that people can think of as a more, if they're not into stock market, something like land or property?
Yeah, I think especially for entrepreneurs, you know, and professionals specifically, you know, owning the building that you're renting makes great sense, or finding a building that you can rent to yourself makes great sense. I did that as an entrepreneur. I talked with a lot of my clients about doing exactly the same thing. You know, having an advisor that helps you see and understand that and how to do that. You know, mm-hmm. there's different kinds of SBA, you know, small business administration loans that are out there to help entrepreneurs purchase properties, mm-hmm. To buy equipment. You know, so there are some good things that are programs that are available to entrepreneurs. And a good advisor will help you find those kinds of things and take advantage of them and understand what the tax implications of that are. So it's not just investing in the market. It is investing in different ways that make sense to your business. So purchasing property is a good thing.
I'm reading the foreword of your book. You mentioned something called the Johari window, and that I want people to understand what that is. I mean, there's a bit of an ego being an entrepreneur about I'm going to do it on my own. I'm not going to let anybody tell me what to do. But what's a drawback? I mean, we talked about the positive aspects of being a forward thinker and being self-reliant. But what are the pitfalls that people need to look out for?
Well, you don't know what you don't know, right? And that's really kind of what the Johari window is about. Sometimes people see things about ourselves that we don't see ourselves. And there's things that we don't know about ourselves that other people also don't know about us. And it really is being open to outside input. You know, I loved in the last segment, you used the word discernment, right? When you discern a decision, you're open to input. That's how I started my business, how I left Big Four accounting and started my business. I went through a discernment process and I was open to listening to input of others. And for me personally, it was prayer and meditation as well, just being open to that. And I think that's important. Discernment is a very powerful tool because then you can kind of figure out, am I really overreacting? What are the facts? You know, our investment approach is an evidence-based approach. You know, your physician, your approach is an evidence-based approach, right? Mm-hmm. It's based on evidence. You use the scientific, science of the human body and the things that impact it. And I use the science of investing and the strategies of investing. It's a similar process, and entrepreneurs can do the same thing when they're discerning their decisions is to take outside input again, but be selective on, I think, the advisors that you're using. You know, there's an advisor type, that's out there, called a master builder. If you want to think of it this way, you know, the great cathedrals of Europe or the pyramids of Egypt were built by a master builder. In his book, Atul Gawande, The Checklist Manifesto, talks about this. And he says, basically, that master builder mindset is what's prevalent in many professional industries, but especially, in my view, in the financial industry. It's somebody that says, hey, this is what you should do. This is my way. They don't really explain it well. That's kind of the master builder that's paternalistic, right? They tell you kind of what to do. There's another kind of advisor that is informative. They gather all the information, they give it to you, and they say, you decide. And then there's the interpretive advisor, the one that gathers all the information, but knows you and what your goals and objectives are and sifts through that to say, hey, these are the three things I think you should think about. I think you should think about number three the most because X, Y, and Z. That interpretive advisor is with you on the journey. So when you go into a process of discernment, it's not just that you're going in it by yourself. You can be discerning and going on a journey with other advisors, but you should be kind of selective and understand how do they make decisions and what's the process that they use, what's their discovery process, what's their communication process, and do they have a process for implementation to make sure that they can dot all the I's and cross all the T's and help you do that so that things don't fall through the cracks. It's like just when you come up with when you're caring for a patient, you come up with a way to care for them, and you want to make sure things don't fall through the cracks.
I think what you're describing is one of my things that is an underpinning to my practice. And I think most independent docs is it's a partnership. It has to be a give and take. There has to be trust, but it's about communication. And you almost have to know yourself so you can choose the right advisor. I mean, some people kind of want to be told what to do. I'm not one of those, but some people are like that. And so having somebody who dovetails and also probably augments what you lack, that would be the thing, because this is a life altering decision that you can be making. We're talking about your future and your ability to have a path that you don't have to deviate from, because there's been so much upheaval. I can imagine all small businesses being shut down, having to work from home, all these things that you could never have imagined, not having people come to your business because of restrictions and quarantining. I mean, all these things are, no one would ever think this is so out there, that to be able to be nimble and be able to think outside the box and take a bad situation and find a positive in it, that's a real skill. And having somebody like your advisor who can roll with you and not panic and not be in a position that doom and gloom, because that's another thing that I don't do that. I mean, we have to figure out a way, we're going to do it. So all these things you have to take into consideration, don't you?
Yeah, you really do. And it's a relationship, right? And it's like any relationship. When you're in relationship with somebody, you're walking with them, you're in solidarity with them. And it doesn't matter, you're going to have good times and bad times and all of these things, but you're there for the long term, right? And that's the kind of relationship we want to develop with our clients. We want to be there for the long term. We say, we're going to make mistakes along the way. We are human beings, and we're just, that just happens to be kind of our curse, right? We do make mistakes. But when we recognize that we made a mistake, if we have a process to say, okay, I made a mistake, let me get some feedback on that, figure out how that mistake was made, to update our process to ensure that we minimize the possibility of making that mistake again, right? It's like our own personal thing. We can't grow personally unless we recognize what our faults are and then actually do something about it, right? And so in a business, when you look for somebody that's a partner and an advisor, you also want to make sure that they're doing the same thing with their business and their business processes. They make a mistake. How do you fix it? What do you do? That's why I say a lot of times when you're looking for an advisor, ask them what their process is like and what do they go through when they find out they made a mistake. Very few people are going to be able to answer that question because they don't really think about improving their process. They just think, well, I shouldn't do that again.
No, that's probably not the better way to handle it. And I look at your services, you're not just financial advisor, but business advisory services is also part of what the AMDG product offer or your business offers. What does that entail? Is that, if you're starting off a practice, does it help you if you want to become, bigger in the market? It helps you grow and make strategies to become the biggest player? Or, how does that work as a business advisor? Do you have to be a certain size business, or it just rolls with the person?
Yeah, it's not a large consulting firm. We're not trying to put together strategic business plans for our clients to grow exponentially or anything like that. But but we do provide services for tax, payroll, bookkeeping, basically helping them set up their business for success. We do get into conversations about strategic planning, how to structure their business. We're not attorneys. We can't give legal advice. But we understand how business structure works. So, I had a client that called me up a couple of weeks ago, and she has one business and she's thinking about starting another business that has some intellectual property, and she has other partners. And we talked about how best to set that second business up and share those profits with those partners, without giving them a share of her current business, right? Because that doesn't really have much to do with it. It's related, but it's not the same. So kind of just walking through and truly understanding what the needs are, and then identifying if we're in a position to actually give advice on that situation, or if we need to bring in some more expertise. And so having that advisor that recognizes when they're in over their depth, but knows enough to figure that out, and to bring in an expert to back them up, to back up that entrepreneur. That's the kind of advisor that you want to align yourself with.
I totally agree with that. Let's take our final break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Wayne Titus. And again, you should go to his website, waynebtitus.com. And there you can buy his book, which is The Entrepreneur's Guide to Financial Well-Being. And, you know, before the break, you were really breaking down for the listeners the importance of, and I like the way you put in your book, a holistic approach to advising. It's not just making, on your side, making money. It's about being a support, an advisor, an outgrowth, something that the person can actually grow with. That's what it sounds like. So as the relationship, as the business grows and gets more mature, so does the relationship. That's how I take it. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I just did a workshop with the MICPA on how to be a successful advisor for entrepreneurs. And I talked about, you know, this idea of PERM. That was kind of my acronym for it. Personal understanding, basically what's personal to that, the personal needs and goals of that entrepreneur are understanding the environmental aspects of things, like, you know, obviously right now we just came through this COVID-19 situation. Those are environmental factors that derailed a lot of businesses. The regulatory industry, depending upon the industry that you're in, you've got local, state, federal government that may have new regulations and things that could impact you, including things coming in the future. We're talking now about the potential increase in capital gains taxes for high tax, for high level taxpayers. Mm-hmm. But there's also the pending increase in ordinary income tax that was legislated as part of the Tax Reform Act back in 2017. So if Congress does nothing, rates are still going to go up in 2026. People aren't planning for that. So understanding what the impacts of those are and being aware of them is important. And then finally, market specific, here in Michigan, we had the Flint water crisis, and that was a specific impact, financial impact on many of those businesses in Flint. And that was a specific market of Flint. It wasn't just like an environmental impact. It was a market impact that was very focused on the impact of Flint. So, I think advisors need to be aware of all of those all of those areas, that the personal, the environmental, the regulatory, and market-specific factors that are impacting entrepreneurs if they're going to be good advisors.
Got you. And I know we've been speaking about investing, or we spoke about investing, but what about things like wealth transfer? That's the one thing that, you want to leave a legacy for your family, your loved ones, and that's something that we really don't know a lot about. We've heard about the death tax and things like that, which are never good. But how do you help yourself and your family, God forbid, before you leave this earth, so they can actually benefit from all the sacrifices and work that you actually did?
Yeah, I talk to a lot of clients about that. That's their main concern. The main concern is they don't want to be a burden on their children or anyone else. They want to be, independent. So I think it's important really to focus on that now. We said earlier, don't put things on the back burner. Face the facts now and try to figure out, can you meet your goals and objectives? And if you can't, then maybe you can crystallize and come up with some additional or other goals and objectives. But at least you know. If you are in a position to leave a legacy, then I think it's important to plan, how do you want to pay tax? Because escaping tax is difficult, right? But we want to minimize and mitigate it. So one of the unique things that we, really focus on is a 20 to 40 year strategic tax cash flow plan, where we're focused on trying to minimize and mitigate the impact of taxes over a long period of time. Because you can't decide, like on December 31st, I'm going to make a contribution to my IRA and think that that's really going to be impactful in your tax situation, because it's just not. But if you look at the different tax rates that are in place now, we're in a lower tax regime than we're going to be in 2026. Mm-hmm. So might it make sense to pull some of that income forward and pay tax on it now so you don't have to pay tax on it later? To take advantage of things like contributions to Roth accounts or conversion to Roth accounts, or to just, you know, saving to a joint account or to a trust. There's other things that make sense to mitigate the impact of tax over a long time. That's what's going to help you preserve and pass on that legacy. And then understand what the impact in the regulatory environment is. In 2020, the CARES Act changed, the SECURE Act changed and extended required minimum distributions to age 72, which a lot of people thought were great. But what they didn't realize was they took away the lifetime stretch for beneficiary IRAs. And so now non-spouse beneficiaries must take distributions from those beneficiary IRA accounts before the end of the 10th year. Mm-hmm. And if they, you know, there's big implications if they don't. And if you wait until the end of the 10th year, you're going to have a big chunk of money that's going to go into income and you're going to pay tax at whatever that rate is going to be at that point in time. So it might make sense to plan that out sooner than wait till later. So again, it's different dimensions of that tax code. Working with an advisor to help you understand that and to put together a plan and not to ignore it until the last minute. You know, my dad jokingly said to me one time, you know, what do I care? I'll be dead. Right? It'll be your problem, in other words. Mm-hmm. But that's just not the right way to do it. You want to have an idea, and that's what you asked me. How do you put that together? Mm-hmm. Find an advisor that can help you do exactly that, to look at it, to face it, and to decide what is your strategic plan so that you can successfully get those assets in some form of legacy to your beneficiaries. It doesn't happen by accident.
Apparently not. Now, in terms of the economy, because it's like a moving target, but there's rumblings of, you know, having inflation and devaluation and maybe not even having a dollar. I mean, I'm reading all sorts of things that are going on. Should we think about putting it in precious metals, or is, like we talked before the break, something that's tangible like land, would that hold its value? I mean, because is it wise just to put everything in a Roth where the value of the money may shrink just be based on inflation?
Yeah, my opinion about that is that inflation is erosive, and we've been in a very low inflationary period for a long time. If you actually read the forecasts that I'm reading, there is not a very large probability that inflation is going to go up significantly in the near future. The forecast is it's basically not going to do that. There's a lot of news out there that is a little misleading in some ways. I don't think that inflation certainly is a risk, but mm-hmm. I think it's a little overblown. People say, well, this has never happened before. That's true. But other things like this have happened. If you think back in 2007, 8, 9, we had the Great Recession, right? And what happened during the Great Recession? Well, we did something called quantitative easing. I don't know if you remember that term or not.
Oh, I remember.
Basically, we flooded the market with dollars. Mm-hmm. We bailed out GM. We did a lot of things. And they said, well, it wasn't nearly to this degree. Well, if you think about what the dollars were worth then when we did it versus what they were worth now, and you start to evaluate it and look at the evidence, again, kind of fact-based, the likelihood of having, you know, super high inflation in any time in the near future is unlikely. Even so, equity, in my view, is the best hedge against inflation. Not gold, not, you know, precious metals, not land. You know, all those things do have value. Mm-hmm. But if it's interesting, I heard a statistic today, people investing in gold received less return over a long period of time than they did if they would have just invested in governmental bonds.
Wow.
That's a crazy statistic.
It is.
Right? Because people don't think about that. But
no.
but you know, the movement of gold is where people make money. And if they can incite fear, they can take advantage of that. So if you follow the money on a lot of that information, what you'll find is it's usually driven because people are speculating on the value of those things. And there's a lot of people that are going to be, some people that are going to be winners, and there's a lot of people that are going to exchange their capital through the markets to someone else.
That's a big statement. I mean, it's most things, unfortunately, are driven by fear, and somebody is puppet mastering most of it because they're going to stand to gain from it. I mean, what about digital dollar like Bitcoin? And if the Fed creates a digital dollar for our system, how does that affect things? Or have we?
You know, I think it's not the digital currency so much that's the value. It's the actual tracking of transactions. Barry Melanson is the chairman of the AICPA, and he's got a great talk on not digital currency, but basically the block technology behind these transactions and being able to authenticate transactions financially with that blockchain technology is what the real value in this whole process is. It's not necessarily Bitcoin. I think there's still a lot of speculation out there. I understand people are taking it as currency, but I'm not making any of those recommendations to my clients at this point.
Makes sense. You know, unfortunately, the time goes so quickly. How can people reach you? And I know that your business is in Michigan. Is that the only state that people can use your services?
No, we are an SEC registered investment advisor, and my businesses are, and we serve clients in many, many states. If people want to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me through LinkedIn, Wayne B. Titus III. They can also get in touch with me at my website, WayneBTitus3.com. Our firm website is amdgservices.com.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed it, and I learned a great deal. I have some work to do, and I might be contacting you.
Dr. George, it was my pleasure.
What you do is awesome, and thank you for everything you do to help folks, because we definitely need it.
Thank you for letting me share it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.